Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is our very special mix. Bye bye.
Hello there, this is Maxwell. I am calling you today from the Proud to Be Different show on our lovely network known as, of course, The Essence of Success, held together by the gracious and wonderful Ms. Lennis. Our calling number, of course, is going to be 646-727-2914, and our subject tonight is going to be what it's like being a multi-minority, somebody who is dealing with one issue while being in another issue and all in the same cab. Before we start the program, though, I want to break down some news and entertainment and stuff and shout-outs. Shout-outs first. I just wanted to let you know that if you are seeing the pictures that are flashing across your computer screen or phone screen or whatever manual electronic program you've got in your hand there, the first one that's I really love is a photograph that was taken by my friend Purple Mark Worth. It's a Space Needle with the EMP building in the foreground. He used the colorization on that with his, I believe he told me it was his iPhone, but I'm not sure. I can be corrected on that later. And he does these gorgeous photographs all over the city and all over the world, actually, in Europe as well. He did a really beautiful one at the Louvre as well. I wanted to point out the Screaming Rockabilly skulls, which I'm going to at some point in time get as a tattoo, are done by my friend Andrew Jesus Hunter, who is a tattoo artist in the UK, in Scotland. His tattoo shop is Voodoo Body Piercing and Tattoo, Boston, which is, yes, there's actually a Boston in Scotland, and it's near Nottingham on the East Coast. And there's a photograph, a beautiful photograph as well, of Diablo Dam by my friend Heather's friend, air quote friend, Nate, when they took a little trip there a few weeks ago. She posted it on her Facebook, and I really enjoyed it and got permission, so it's up there. And so here's the news. Guardians of the Galaxy, which I saw a couple weeks ago with a friend of mine, amazing movie, $300 million at this point. That's national and international. I love this film because it's not just the action-adventure that you got with the Avengers movie, but it also has a lot of good story heart. And it was impressive. Also, I forgot, Nina is going to be the moderator in the chat room, so if you guys have any questions, you can go through the chat, and she will be able to help direct you. I'll be able to see it as well, and I might jump in and be like, oh, hey, we got a chat. Let's go. Michael Sam, the football player, the gay-out football player, was let go by the St. Louis Rams, that picked him up from the infamous videotape photo of him kissing his boyfriend when he got the news. They may or may not, if not official, been able to take the pressure of him being such a out-there gay football player. So they let him go, and then in less than a week, he got picked up by the Dallas Cowboys, of all things. I was really kind of shocked. So shout out to Shaw. I know she's a Cowboy fan. She loves them. I was really kind of impressed that they picked it up. And checking today on the news, I was able to see that his coworkers on the Dallas Cowboys think he's doing a really good job. So woohoo, we'll see him more. Simon Pegg, Nick Frost, and Edgar Wright of the Cornello trilogy, otherwise known as Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, and World's End, are planning to do another trilogy, completely different, and they are saying it may be spending another 10 years like this other one did. So that means three more pictures from these guys that we know and we love, and we all like geek out and jump up and down and act like silly little 13-year-old girls because, you know, their stuff is just cool. I did want to touch on the death of Joan Rivers. The thing that I really wanted to kind of point out on her was when I was a kid growing up, I didn't have a lot of connection to anything except for like TV and media and stuff like that. And so she was really big in the 80s, and I had her album, and I used to play it to ad nauseum, and I would requote her jokes. And I just thought what she said and what she did was so incredibly different from any other comedian or any other famous person that it just blew my mind. And I loved her. And she was very successful. She had, in her passing, she had three television shows, a cable show. She did QVC. She had just finished a book. She was constantly touring. The woman was working like crazy, and she was in her early 80s. So whatever comments you can make about her doing all of her plastic surgery, she beat you to it. She made the comments about herself, and she made just brilliant jokes about life, and there was no one else like her. And I'm going to miss her, honestly. I gave her props. John Barrymore, who is one of my favorite gay actors from Torchwood and Doctor Who, and now he's on Arrow, is going to be in Seattle next spring at Emerald City Comic Con, our comic book convention. It is from March 27th, Friday, to Sunday the 29th, and it's also going to have Patrick Warburton, who is one of the biggest voiceover actors, who does like the next door neighbor in Family Guy, and he's in he was actually the Tick, if we can remember that show from the 90s, the live action Tick, and he's just been all over the place, and we get him for the weekend. It's going to be nice. And Charisma Carpenter, who was in Buffy the Vampire Slayer as well as Angel, and a bunch of other stuff. She's going to be there, and it's going to be a fun show. But I am going to be standing front, line, and center for John Barrymore, because if anybody has had any experience seeing this guy, he is bawdy. He will probably drop trow at some point in time. And he's kind of like your obnoxious gay hairdresser. Even though he plays these butch, like, action figure kind of characters on TV, he's very much a man's man. And then you get him off set, and he's just out there. He's a hoot. A hoot. So, mark your calendars, March 27th through the 29th. He will be there all 3 days, as well as Patrick and Charisma. And it's going to be wonderful. I love seeing that our comic book convention keeps getting bigger and bigger each year, and that we get to do more and more stuff with it. So, and they plan things out like movie shows and contests and all kinds of stuff throughout the week now. So it's a big festival. So with that, I wanted to get all those fun things out of the way. And I'm going to go ahead and bring on my special guest. Now, just a little background. This is my friend Frank. I've known Frank literally since grade school. So we're talking like 70s. Back in the world of brown and orange, and that was the only two colors that we were allowed to wear. But we grew up together in Central Washington, in Ephrata, and he and I got to see a lot of stuff together. And there were some things that I didn't know about him, like the fact that he was Native American or One Nation. And so it's going to be a learning experience for myself, as well as everybody else out there. And so if you all have any questions, the number is going to be 646-727-2914, and I'll be taking some phone calls after the break, midway through. So I'll bring him on here. Let's see if this works. Okay. Are you there with me, Frank?
I'm here.
Yay! How you doing? Okay. So this is going to be very nonchalant because when I tried to be all professional and write questions down earlier today, it didn't work. So it's just going to be kind of like a, hey, how you doing? What's going on? Just can't swear. That's all.
Well, there's
so
no
when we were kids growing up, I can't remember. I don't think I really knew about you. I always thought that you were like Caucasian, like everybody else, because you're a very light-skinned individual. Was there any sort of message that was put out to you by the family? Was it something that was even talked about? I mean, like, how early did you find out, oh, yeah, by the way, this is what your background is? Or was it something that was always known, it was just never really talked?
It was something that was always known, but there was a message. My mother made it very clear that it wasn't something that we discussed in public. She wanted her children to be able to just be like everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay.
So she made it very clear that we should not volunteer any information. Not that you should lie if somebody were to directly ask you, but simply just don't volunteer what you were beyond what they assumed you to be.
Yeah. Now, when you were growing up and you saw images that were very cartoonish or caricatures on TV, how was that like for you growing up and you saw them? Did it make you cringe, or are you just like, oh, somebody's stupid and they don't know what they're doing?
Well, yes and no. I have to admit that being her youngest, my mother did a fairly good job of shielding me from a lot of the things in the family that my brothers and sisters probably experienced more than I did. However, it depended on what they did. One of my favorite cartoons as a child, I never realized how anti-Indian it was, although until I watched it as an adult. Because as a child, you really, depending on when in your childhood, you really don't think about a lot of that, and parents don't really bring that into your world a lot, and in many cases, they try to shield you from that. So it wasn't something that as a young child that I put much thought into. Most of the things that came up in that regard were direct and in-your-face situations. They weren't things that you saw in the media or on TV.
Now, I know historically from where we grew up with, we were in an area of the country that legally was dealing with a very hot-button issue of tribes that were basically being, for less of a better word, screwed over by the white man because of the Cooley Dam situation, where it was created in the early part of the 20th century. The tribes in the area were promised, oh, if we use your land, then you'll get kickback after a couple of years from when the dam is in business, and it didn't happen. And they actually didn't get any sort of money until like the late 80s, early 90s. Was any of that was going on? Because I don't remember hearing anything about it until I became an adult later on. Was any of that something that you knew about?
Not really. You have to remember, I spent most of my childhood up until about the age of 10 in the state of Oklahoma. So most of the time, I believe I first met you after we came up for one of our summer visitations with our father. And so I didn't have a very large connection with the tribes in the Pacific Northwest until I moved up here permanently, and that wasn't until third or fourth grade.
Oh, yeah.
So I wasn't that familiar with what was happening with the, I mean, I am now as an adult, but at the time I wasn't that familiar with the tribes and what was happening up there, other than for the Wanapum.
Yeah. The thing that's really interesting to me, and I feel kind of sympathetic for it, is when I was trying to do some research earlier on this program, I wanted to try and see if I can find numbers and statistics. There's nothing. I could not find any sort of percentage number of Native Americans or First Nation people considering themselves lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, whatever, that census has been taken by the government of the country. And this was stuff as of like last year. And I'm like, this is kind of crazy that we don't have this. And it's a part of me was thinking this was a representation of the government not caring, or that there is such a shame still in levels of minorities that they don't talk about such things, like male African Americans really having an issue talking about being openly gay and that sort of thing. So I didn't know if that was something that you might have an opinion on.
Well, I agree that there aren't, I don't think that I've ever seen any numbers myself. And, you know, I've been studying, I'm finishing my degree in history with a focus on Native American history, and I don't even think in the history of the United States that they've ever really counted such a thing. When it comes to Native Americans, the focus is mostly on who and what is a Native American. Less so than any multi-minority or cross-minority ties that there would be there. I have never really, unlike the African American experience, I have never really had much of an issue among the Native community being openly gay. Most of them are fairly accepting. Most of them are fairly understanding. I think the strongest response I ever got from anyone was that the only reason why I was gay was because I was looking for, it was basically he was trying to explain to me that I was looking for exciting sexual experiences that I wouldn't normally get in a heterosexual relationship. But it hasn't really been overtly homosexual or homophobic in the way that they address the issue. Most of them don't even address the issue. It's kind of a unspoken, accepted thing. Nobody really even addresses it. I've been to several Native communities as an adult. It's never been a secret. I don't think it's been a secret in my life since, what, sixth grade? So, it, and in the Native community, it never comes up, at least in my experience.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, an example of that from what I've seen is historically they always talk about different communities are able to, different tribes are able to look at, tell me with the terminology, was it two spirits?
Yeah, two spirits is
two spirit where they refer to somebody who is gay as having two spirit, both male and female, and they gave them a lot of times female roles in the community, in the tribes, but at the same time, it was acceptance as opposed to putting them out someplace and setting them on fire kind of thing. So there was, and then also with marriage today, the tribes are a lot more accepting than the states are legally, from what I've been able to see. So I mean, I'm just on that fact, I've always been really respectful. So I mean, is that something that you think is an advantage? Or is it something, do you think that it's just how it should always be?
Well, it is how it should always be. Being more accepting of the situation is the way it should be. There's no reason to deny anyone anything from my mm-hmm. perspective. The only thing that comes up is we want to be careful when we use the term two spirits. That's used as a pan-tribal thing, and it's not pan-tribal. Not all tribes were necessarily openly accepted and that kind of thing. But it was more acceptable to Indigenous Americans than it was to the European colonists who displaced them. A lot of the institutionalized homophobia that you see in tribal communities anymore is predominantly the result of colonialization. The tribes are more accepting, but you do see situations where there are tribes that, like in Oklahoma, there are a few tribes that have chosen to follow the state's ban, mainly because they can't find any historical example of having performed a same-sex marriage, for example. But a lot of them do it because they don't wish to have confrontations with either the federal government or the state government. I mean, in Oregon, I believe it was the Cow Creek Reservation, the Cow Creek tribes here in Oregon, that were the first or one of the first tribes to allow same-sex marriage. And there was a lot of talk about, since that violated the Defense of Marriage Act at the time, would that have issues with their sovereignty? Would they run into difficulties with Congress and the federal government? And that's what you have to think of when you're thinking of these tribes. It's really a sense of pride that I feel when a tribe steps up and says, we're going to do this, knowing full well that they could be terminated. They could be, and when I say terminated, meaning that their status as a sovereign nation could be ended because of their stance. So, I mean, so it's something that brings pride to me as both a gay man and a Native man.
Yeah. Now, when we were growing up and we were dealing with all kinds of fun, exciting experiences in Central Washington, which did you feel as a gay teenager was something heavier to deal with, being gay or being Native? Because with the Native American portion of it, you were dealing with the racism that comes with not being pure, that sort of thing. And then with being gay, you have the moralistic Christian Judeo sometimes viewpoint on how life is supposed to be led.
That's actually a difficult question. oddly enough,
I didn't want to think of a boggle question. I just wanted to throw you for a curve.
Well, oddly enough, the dirty little secret in my life, and I hate to call it that, but that's really what it's been, is that I'm Native. As you mentioned, I am light-complected as compared to some members of my family, or lighter-complected. I physically look like my mother, but a lot of my coloration follows that of my white father. So it was always my dirty little secret. It wasn't something that I went out of my way to hide, but no one ever asked, and I never talked about it.
Yeah.
So it was much easier for me to be openly gay because it was a way for me to go against my mother's edict not to talk about those secret segments of your life. So it... You know, but that's also difficult for me to answer. I mean, we came of sexual maturity in the early 80s. It was something that, you know, during a time for gay men in particular, that was dangerous.
Because the only real image that we had as gay folk was Rock Hudson and ACT UP and all of these AIDS images that were showing death. And that's all we really knew, at least from my perspective.
Exactly.
We've come along.
Yes, we have.
Now, as you've matured and as you become an adult, and this is something I need to mention to those out there listening, is I had lost touch with Frank for a couple of decades, and so I just recently got back in touch with him, and so I'm sort of catching up, and that's why I think that it's like I get to learn stuff about you that I didn't know about myself before. And as you've gone back to school and as you're and being an adult and that sort of thing, how much have you connected with saying, hey, I'm a gay man, but I'm also a gay man who is Native American, that I am representative of two parts of this country?
Oh, it's like my teen years all over again when it comes to my Native heritage.
Without the pimples.
without the pimples. I'm sure you remember when I can't even remember the name of the organization back in Wenatchee.
The support group.
Yeah, the support group that we went to. When we were there, I kind of dove headfirst into that, despite you holding onto my ankles. I'm doing a lot of the same thing in my 40s as a Native man. I have the freedom as an adult to choose to discuss it if I wish to. There were times in my childhood when I understood my mother's edict because I had opened my mouth to the wrong person at the wrong time, generally in Oklahoma, which didn't go very well. So as an adult and having gone through what I went through as a teenager, as a gay man, I'm not willing to sit behind a screen anymore. I'm not willing to allow people to determine for me what my minority statuses are.
Mm-hmm.
You can't tell by, I do have some privilege. I mean, I am pale-complected. I have the opportunity, unlike a lot of natives in this country, to be hidden. I can choose to hide it, but it's not who I am. And so in many ways it reflects my being gay.
Yeah.
For me, many they follow a very similar path.
Okay.
Well, if I can make the announcement of our break moment, I'm going to play a little track. Now, I tried to upload some music earlier, and it didn't quite work, so I will be using my wonderful Lennis's music. So who knows what I will be playing now, but I'm sure it's going to be lovely. If my wonderful guest can hang out for a couple of minutes, I'm going to get myself some more coffee because, oh, my goodness, can I just tell you, how much do I love the fall? How much? One word. Well, a couple of words. Pumpkin spice latte. Pumpkin coffee is the greatest thing in the world, and I will stand by that until my dying days. So if everybody can chill out for a couple of minutes, I'll be right back, and we will open it up to phone calls. The call-in number is going to be area code 646-727-2914. You're listening to me, Maxwell, my special guest, Frank, on Proud to be Different on the Essence of Success Network, and we shall be right back.
Your fears seem to hide deep.
Okay, so we are back. I just wanted to remind everybody that our phone lines are open. The number is area code 646-727-2914 for the show Proud to Be Different. Host me, Maxwell, talking with my friend Frank, and we are talking about what it is like being a multi-minority. That's my word. I used it, so if anybody else tries it, it's copyrighted. Anyway, so you still there with me, Frank?
I'm still here.
Awesome, possum. So while we're chatting, if anybody comes in, we will go ahead and bring them on. Now, one of the things that I was going to ask you was with going through life and what we've seen and what we've dealt with. I mean, we're old now. We're getting there. what has been one of the things that you kind of look back upon that has been really something that you didn't expect, and especially with, like, the civil rights movement as a gay man, seeing the legalization of gay marriage, adoption, more and more states. I mean, there's very few places where you can get fired for being gay anymore, it seems like. Don't Ask, Don't Tell was dropped. Were these things that you ever expected to see in your lifetime?
Gay marriage, I had a feeling, would eventually be something that I would see in my lifetime. I did not expect it this early in my lifetime. I more expected it when I would have been in the sunset years of life. So I am a little surprised that it's happening so quickly.
Yeah.
Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Well, that one is a little bit of an interesting story for me. I never really understood why they had an issue with gays in the military, because there's always been gays in the military. And as the child of a military man, it wasn't something that he really talked about much. Even when the topic was on the table, he just never really discussed it much. He didn't seem to care. And, you know, my father, he was one of the most conservative men I've ever met in my life. But it was really not something that was discussed. I mean, he had more issues with women in the military than he had with gay men in the military. I never expected something like Don't Ask, Don't Tell to begin with. So the policy itself was more of a surprise than its repeal. Because I either thought they would either flat out say no or just repeal it, or just allow it, one or the other. So
yeah.
When, during Clinton's presidency, they brought in Don't Ask, Don't Tell, that was the surprise for me.
Yeah.
Adoption, you know, I never expected that gay couples would have an easy time being able to have children unless they had those children through arrangements with their female or their lesbian friends.
Or like prior relationships.
Or prior marriage, yeah. Exactly. It wasn't something that I thought that, from what I knew of America, that they'd be willing to embrace something like that. I mean, my experience in America was that, heck, as an interracial man, watching my mother navigate the South and hearing her tales of growing up as an interracial woman in the segregated South, it was not something that I expected to happen for gays in this country during my lifetime. Or at least the vast majority of my lifetime.
Yeah. The thing that, I mean, I literally, when the gay marriage thing started, And I just flatline call it gay marriage because I'm just, I ignorant be that way. For me, it was just such a snowball effect of watching county after county, state after state, literally just rolling up its doors and, or opening up its doors and saying, yes, we're saying this is acceptable. I think with the election, the first election of President Obama, and then with him coming out so positive towards the community, as well as, the first sitting president to be able to do a video on YouTube for the It Gets Better program and say, you know what, if you're a gay teenager, it's okay. You're not a bad person. You do not deserve to be bullied. You do not deserve to be kicked out of your home. You're a good person, and I'm the president, kind of thing. Never in the history of our country would that have ever happened before. And whether it was a PR stunt, it doesn't matter. The effect was it got people, and people started saying, oh, let's start looking at things differently. And I think that was one of the things that really helped the marriage movement. And when you start seeing these videos on YouTube of couples performing marriages and Macklemore with his song Same Love, where you've got a video song, this song is being played by kids to their parents saying, this is a good song, I like the message of this song, and the parents listening to it going, huh, I spent a lot of time wasting my energy on what? So I think we had these sort of building blocks that have happened over the past, say, 8 years or 6 years. And right now we're in a position of the rest of the state's got to pull up their big boy pants and join the rest of the party kind of thing. That's kind of how I look at it. And it's amazing. I mean, I wept every single time I would see another state say it. And I was just like, this is amazing. I never, when I was a kid like us growing up in the 80s with all the Darth Vader kind of viewpoint on life that we had, there was no way I would have ever imagined it. It was scary. So now I'm a lot more, it's interesting because As somebody growing up, I had a lot of hope for the future. And when I talked with one of my parents, they had a very cynical view. And they were about the same age that I am now. And now that I'm at their point from that, I'm not as cynical as they are. I still have hope. I'm realistic, I think. But I still have hope. Do you feel yourself from what's gone on that it has given you hope?
Yes.
That was a long time.
I'm gathering my thoughts.
Oh.
From a very young age, I've had a fairly good sense of self for the most part. One of the things that I always used to do is try to protect people from their own stupid mistakes. My brother would do something stupid that would get him in trouble with our parents, and I would tell them that I was the one that did it, even though that really wasn't helpful to him, but as an example. And as I've grown older, that is one of the things that I want to do with my life, is to provide for people who are running into those situations. You mentioned kids being thrown out of their home. I can't understand, in a country that is very particular about children and how they are raised, that we won't allow a parent to spank a child, which I'm fine with that. I'm actually very much in support. You shouldn't be hitting your children. But we'll allow them to throw them out of their house. And, you know... What where are the advocates for these children that are stepping up, that aren't stepping up and saying, okay, this is a teenager, but under the law they're still a minor. If you're going to throw this child out of your house, why aren't you paying child support to support this child? You will be paying for them to have a residence. You will be paying for them to have food. You will be buying them, you know, you're basically divorcing yourself from this child, but you would have to pay your spouse more than you would than you ever have to pay these children. So where are the advocates for these children? And, you know,
well, yeah, and
as
I was actually in agreement with that. I was pointing something out to somebody talking about the fact that 90% of the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender youth that do get thrown out of their homes are because their families are faith-based of some sort. And so it's very unfortunate. They have messed up ideas on what faith is. But that's another story for another episode. what bothers me is the fact that they have this perception that it's their child's fault. Or why would God give me a child that was broken? And it's like, no, it's not the child's fault, and it's not some deity's fault. It's your fault because you don't have the heart or the understanding or the feet in the ground of reality that this is life. You get to have a child who is a part of this wonderful world, not, oh, I've screwed up because they're not going to give me the kind of life I expect them to. Like, you're not breeding horses here. You have kids. It's a big difference.
That is true. A lot of the problem, parents have major expectations for their children. And a lot of the problem is, I think, how our society views children. In many ways, we view children as property. In some cases, the biological parents of a child are not the best suited. It's not in the best interest of that child to be with their biological parents. Yeah, I know there are a lot of studies that say that biological parents are almost always the best, but, you know, sometimes it just doesn't work out. And, you know, the child is not your property, and you are not there to be making this child fit into a mold that you think that this child should fit into. You are there to provide this child the knowledge they need to survive as an adult, particularly upon the time that you are no longer there for them.
Yeah.
That child has interests outside those of you as their parent. And society has interests in that child outside of your interest in that child as a parent. Because in the event of your death or the event that child is no longer part of your life or whatever the situation may be, the rest of us and that child are going to have to find a way to live together. So this idea that parents are the end-all, be-all of a child's upbringing, that regardless of their religious beliefs, is hokey to me. And
I didn't even have, I mean, if you can remember, I didn't even have a real family. Everybody's like, oh, you had one parent raising you. No, I had that parent. I had that parent's therapist. I had that parent's friends. I had a bunch of adults that were keeping an eye out for me that I wasn't really aware of until I was an adult. And it was only then that I was like, oh, you mean, okay. So, yeah, I mean, it's not, we live in this weird society where we're told, oh, yeah, parents are the ones raising the kids. No, they're not. School is raising the kids. Bus drivers are raising the kids. I mean, there's so many people that are looking out for kids, not just two people. True.
Well, in some cases it's not even two people. In some cases it's not even one person. Sometimes it's the children by themselves. I mean, I'm the single. Yeah. I'm the ninth child of a single mother. And I have to admit, although my mother had her faults, she was not a horrible mother. She was usually there for me if I absolutely needed her. She always took time to come to my choir, dance, band, theater events, not necessarily as often as I would like, but she was always there in that stereotypical your parents have to be there kind of way. But,
yeah.
You know, there are situations where I, you know, not to denigrate either of your parents, but there were many times in my childhood when I thought, and I even had discussions with my mother about your situation, and that I thought that you were pretty much there on your own. I never noticed other adults watching out for you.
Oh, yeah.
I never noticed, but then I was a self-absorbed teenager at the time, so that probably was why I was never noticing, but, you know, that was something that it wasn't until I was an adult and got the opportunity to sit down and look back on my life that I realized that a lot of my friends were in that situation.
Which is funny because we lived in a small town that was the political seat of the county, and it was very much a white picket fence. Everybody had a perfect life. Nobody talked about the skeletons in the closet. Sort of reality.
Very much so.
Sorry?
I said very much so.
Yeah. And as far as I understand it, it's still kind of like it.
I don't think it's changed much. It's grown in population considerably, but I don't think it's changed much sociopolitically, no.
Yeah. And it's just basically that small town kind of concept of life. When I was a teenager, I remember very specifically when I walked around, I walked with a very brisk walk. And people were like, oh, you walk like you're in the big city. And I'm like, I just got someplace to go. Other people are walking too slow. They're in my way. Now, I want to get this wrapped up here in a second, but I just want to say, was there anything else that there was out there that you wanted to speak upon that you felt that you – anything you can remember that you wanted to talk about?
Well, I honestly wasn't 100% sure what the complete topic was about, so I didn't really prepare a lot. And I apologize for that, but well, you know, I'm getting old, I get forgetful. The only thing that I would say is, you know, there was one thought that came on my mind when you asked me to come on your show, and that was I once had a professor who, it was a sociology class about minorities, and the first assignment that we had was we had to tell the entire class what our major and what our minority and majority statuses were. And now I live, you know, in Portland, and that's I think we're, 80, 90% white. And most of the class was white, and it was interesting to me to watch the white males in particular try to figure out what a minority status was, because one of the requirements of the assignment was that you had to have a minority status. And that's one of the things that this lesson taught me was that I would like to point out to people that when you're looking at your friends across the table, there are things that they're not telling you. I don't know how many times you've said in this show tonight that you didn't know about me being Native.
Mm-hmm.
There are times when they're not going to talk about it. And in many times, I don't talk about it. If asked for tribal affiliation or my status as enrolled, I don't talk about it. It's a very sensitive topic. So be understanding of your friends. When they do that weird thing that you don't understand, accept that it might be a cultural difference. Accept that it's not about you.
Yeah.
And that's the one thing that I think people need to realize, particularly when it comes to minorities, is if they're doing something that makes you uncomfortable, if your child comes out to gay and it's to you as gay and it's a violation of your deeply held religious beliefs, this isn't about you. And maybe it's time that we set ourselves aside and stop and thought for a moment, why is this person sharing this with me? Why is this person behaving this way? Instead of simply reacting that, you know, the public may perceive me in a particular way if I tolerate your behavior or accept you for who you are.
The other thing that when you were mentioning that came into my mind is there are people who are not, I will just be very polite and say not educated enough, who will use it as a status. Oh, well, I have a friend, and they're such and such minority, and that makes me cool and open-minded. I hate those people. I want to take those people and beat them on the ground with my cane. They drive me nuts.
See, I can't be racist because I have a racial friend response.
Yeah.
Or I can't be homophobic because I have a gay friend response.
Well, not even that. It's people who use it to inflate their own egos, to make themselves feel better because, oh, well, I'm an enlightened individual because of this, or I am better than you are, I'm more liberal than you are because I have a bigger demographic of people in my life. And it's like, do they even like you? Do they hang out at your house? I mean, if they hang out at your house, then maybe it's okay to say that. But if you only just know them in passing or hang out at like a bar or something, no, not really. Because I know a lot of people from backgrounds, but I don't necessarily think that I'm more enlightened because I know them. I just know them in passing.
Well, even if you are very close friends, it's one of the biggest things that the indigenous community struggles with is appropriation. And it's horrible enough to appropriate a culture and their affectations. It's even worse to appropriate a close friend's identity to resume stuff yourself sociopolitically. It's that is something that, yeah, I have a very different view of that. People, because to go back to my previous statement, it's not about you. And I think people get wrapped up in the what do I get out of this? What does this do for me? How am I bettered, harmed, or whatever the situation is? Instead of, I mean, that's one thing that I lovingly thank my mother for, that is the one phrase that she once told me when you and I were having a bit of a spat there in our teen years, was she told me that she felt that I was acting superior to you, and I had made some comment, please forgive me, about how I obviously was superior to you. And the one thing that she said to me was, you should always keep in mind that you are never inferior to somebody until you think you are superior to them. And that has always stuck with me. And the other thing that she's always taught me, at least, is that stop before you react to something, before you simply, you know, assume that what this person is doing to you, and I have to actually give you some credit for this as well, because you were the first one that actually put me in a situation with a friend where I had to actually struggle with whatever dynamic was happening in the relationship. was that maybe you should take a step back and try to think of their position. Maybe you're coming at this from the point of view, maybe you're just angry because the words that you heard coming out of their mouth struck you in a way that you felt was offensive, when maybe that's not at all what they meant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't really know how to wrap that up on that,
well,
but it basically comes down to...
Go ahead.
Well, I, like I said, it basically comes down to the point that I've made a couple of times, is that we need to think less about ourselves and more about each other. I mean, we are a community, and it takes everyone to bring that all together and to support that community.
Yeah.
One of the things that I did like about your mom was she always seemed very nice, and she always seemed very caring, and she never seemed uppity like how some people are. She had, for whatever was going on in her life, for whatever she was dealing with, she still had good grace, and I always respected her for that. Now I'm going to let you go because we got to wrap the show up, and I'm really happy that you were a part of it. Yay! Golf applause. So I thank you so much. You were really great. You were really helpful, and you're going to get a big old Christmas card from me.
Thank you. Thanks for inviting me.
So give a hug and a kiss to your husband for me, and I will let you go. And all my listeners, hang out there for a couple of minutes. I got some updates. I'm going to be giving you the schedule for this next week. And so I'm going to let you go here, Frank. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And let's see here. So we are looking at the schedule for next week, this upcoming week. Tomorrow night we've got Psychic Reading Sundays with Lennis. That's at 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. The show on the 17th, which I have to look at my calendar because I'm just not that smart, is Wednesday. So in the studio with Lennis on Hot Topics, this Wednesday, she's going to be talking about domestic abuse. Sorry, and that's at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and it's the same call-in number for me as it was for her. So it's going to be the 646-727-2914 for both shows, as well as on Friday, her Friday Traffic Jams music. She did one on Sam Smith the other day, and oh my God, it was such a good show. And then on the 21st, she's going to do her Psychic Reading Sundays again at 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Again, that number is 646-727-2914. I want to thank my dear friend Frank for helping out with the show tonight, and for Miss Nina helping out on the board. Woohoo! Whoop, whoop. So thank you so much. And I will be doing my show next Saturday at 9 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. It is going to be doing an interview with a friend of mine talking about spirituality or the lack thereof. So that will be next Saturday night at 9 p.m. It's going to be a little bit shorter show. It won't be a full hour, but we'll try and dense as much as we can humanly get into there. So, anyway, love you all, and I'll talk to you guys soon. Peace.